Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 274. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about hippos and kayaking with crocodiles as we go to Botswana. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have two news stories for you. With the high price of gasoline, some hotels are offering something interesting and unique, at least hotels in California. There's four different hotels that the Los Angeles Times found that are offering free gas credit with hotel stays for your next road trip. And in the good news department, travel to Mexico is up. Despite all the bad publicity, there's a rising demand for travel to Mexico, according to Expedia Inc. Travel bookings to Mexico made on more than 90 ExpediaHotels.com travel sites worldwide have risen nearly 25% over the last 12 months. I saw a similar study that said that American Express was also announcing that people were spending more money in Mexico. So at some point, apparently people decided no longer to be scared and go to those places not so heavily affected by the violence. Links to both of those stories in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com.
I'd like to welcome to the show Spencer Kwan from California, who's come to talk to us about Botswana. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be on the show. I've been a big fan for a long time.
Now, I'm not sure that everyone can picture where Botswana is off the top of their head. I know that I had trouble with that recently. We have a friend who is going to Botswana April 1st. She's going there with the Peace Corps, and I had to look it up on the map. So where is Botswana?
Botswana is in the south-central part of Africa. It's north of South Africa, pretty much due north of South Africa, right in the center there. So pretty easy to find on the map. And the key feature about Botswana is that they have this enormous delta called the Okavango Delta, and all the water runs from Angola and other places in Africa runs into Botswana, which makes it a great place to visit because if you have water, you have wildlife.
What drew you to Botswana?
Some of the people I were traveling with had read the Ladies First Detective Agency book. And so they had said that, oh, we read that. We really want to go to Botswana, experience that. And Botswana is one of those places where, you know, there's every type of animal imaginable that you could see. I mean, lions, elephants. I mean, there's so many elephants, you know, you just sort of ignore the big gray masses in front of you. Leopards, cheetahs, monkeys. There's an amazing number of birds if you're into birds and other wildlife. So, you know, if you're into wildlife, it's an amazing place. And, you know, I'm a kayak guide, and being on the water in the delta is another thing that drew me to there.
And so you actually went on part of your itinerary, in fact, was a kayak trip, is what you were saying.
Right. We spent about 2 weeks there. 1 week was a kayak safari, and the second week was a traditional land safari where you travel in a 10-passenger giant open-air SUV, and you go and basically you look for animals. And we camped out. There's a couple different ways you could see Botswana, but that's what we chose to do.
My concern with camping out has always been that whole circle of life thing and wanting to make sure that my part in that is fairly clear.
Yeah, there is a law of the Delta that says once you step into the Delta, you become part of the food chain and you're not necessarily on the top. So in Africa, you do need to be very careful with the animals. If you do see a lion, it's probably not a good idea to feed it. things there are wild and are dangerous. But typically the guides, if you find a good guide or a good company to go out with, they're very cognizant, very careful. The guides keep a safe distance from the animals. They're trained to know what to do. If a hippo charges or an elephant charges, there's certain things you're supposed to do. And it's one of those things where you just need to respect nature.
And what stands out for you from your trip? What would you tell people if you go to Botswana, do what I did? Absolutely, you've got to.
I think when you go to Botswana, you go for the animals. And, you know, like I said, just seeing a lion walk 5 feet in front of you is just an amazing sight. Seeing a leopard hunt at night is another amazing thing. You know, looks trying to find its prey is just amazing. And seeing some of the birds, or seeing a hippopotamus in the water across from you, or an elephant bathing itself, that type of thing. So there's all the animals, but, you know, there's a lot of other things. The beauty of the land is just amazing. You know, you see the big National Geographic video shots, and it really is like that. I mean, you have a big red ball rising in the morning and coming over the land, and you see silhouettes of elephants walking across. And the other thing is, we had a couple opportunities to meet some people, and that was also an amazing thing. In Botswana, I think it's harder to meet people because it's such a developed tourism industry there.
You're talking about people other than the guides, I assume, and the people at hotels.
Right. Yeah, we did meet some interesting guides. We had two very different guides. We had a gentleman ran the kayak safari. He's from a company called Kayakative Safaris, and John Sandenberg. And he was very young when he came to Botswana, but his family was one of the very first white families there. And unlike South Africa or other places in general, there's been a lot of good relations between the blacks and the whites in Botswana. And really, there's very few whites compared to the number of blacks in Botswana. So the land safari, we had some guides who grew up in the bush. And that was just amazing, talking to them and experiencing them and having, they were able to cook for us. And we specifically asked, well, we want Botswana style food. And so they went out of their way to do that. And they told us stories about when I was young, I used to go out hunting for kudu with my father, that type of thing. So, and we actually had a great opportunity, just one of those lucky traveler events where we happened to be going by a village and we saw a big celebration going on, and we asked the guide and we asked him what's going on. He's like, oh, that's a big Independence Day celebration. And we sort of all looked at each other and said, oh, Independence Day celebration, can we go? And he said, sure. And it turned out it was a big bonus for him because that was his village. So he could stop by and visit his family. And also he could ask permission. So, you know, I got some amazing video and amazing photography of the celebration. There's a dance circle where there's men playing these enormous drums. Women and men are dancing in this dance circle. You feel the rhythms and you hear all the music. And, of course, there's a feast going on. You know, they're cooking these enormous pots of food. So, you know, we were really lucky. I think it's challenging because when you do research on Botswana, you look into it, everything's sort of like, you know, we'll take you on a 10-day safari and we'll experience this park and this park. And so we were very lucky to be able to experience something so real and so cultural. So we were sort of blessed. And I encourage anyone who goes there to try and look for that. So
that seems like quite a surprise, too, that you weren't planning on. Any other big surprises from the trip? Was it what you expected?
Every day was a surprise. I mean, going to sleep and hearing, there's just amazing sounds at night. I mean, the frogs, there must have been 20 different species of frogs, and they make an enormous amount of noise at night. So it's just amazing trying to go to sleep with all that racket. And in the background, you hear a hippo snorting, that type of thing. So I don't think there was a day there that we were bored. There were certain times, if you go on a safari in the safari trucks, it can be challenging and very tiring. It tends to get hot. The roads are extremely bumpy. There's dirt blowing everywhere. But, you know, you do get to get an idea of the land, and you get an idea of the land, you do get to see the animals.
I recall that when I went on one of those up in a little further north in Africa, they recommended you pretty much wear something the color of dirt, because you were going to look like that with all the dust that was blowing around anyway.
Pretty much, yeah. You do get a layer of dirt on you. It's a healthy layer, but, you know, you do get the opportunity to wash it off. So that's the price you pay for getting to see a lion or an elephant right in front of you. So,
well, and the biggest problem I think I recall running into was that big goofy grin on my face was going to get some of the dirt too, so...
Right. It could be like riding motorcycles and getting bugs stuck between your
exactly.
teeth.
Exactly. What was the biggest surprise as far as an animal encounter?
We had so many, it's hard to pull one out. We had the opportunity, we were in one preserve that's owned by a local village, and they actually allow people to go on night drives. And so most of the parks in Botswana don't allow night drives, partially because of safety, and sure, partially because of there's a lot of different animals going on. And so
not even a night trek, but actually a night drive.
A night drive.
Okay.
Yeah, there's two things about that. One is the night drive is, you know, you do get to see totally different number of animals out there. Like I mentioned earlier, you get to see a leopard hunting in the, and right, we were lucky mm-hmm. to spot him. We also saw a pretty rare creature, is my understanding, and supposedly it's very lucky if you spot him as a civet cat. So, which just looked like this big black cat that just sort of course, being a cat, just disappeared in the darkness. Hmm. And the animals are different. I mean, you get to see the hippopotamuses come out of the water. The elephants, who normally ignore you during the day, don't really like your light, so they behave differently. So that was one of the most amazing experiences. You don't often get to do treks in Botswana. You don't often get to walk, like go on a hike. If you do, in most of the parks, you have to be accompanied by several guides, and some of them have to be carrying guns. And that's because if you're walking in the middle of the road, you could easily be somebody's tasty dinner. So there are areas where you do get to go on hikes, one being in the delta. We would kayak for most of the day, and then in the afternoon, we would either go out fishing or we would go out and take a short walk. And that's a great opportunity because you get to see, you know, we saw some amazing rare owls. We saw baboons in the trees, that type of thing. So you get to see things that you don't normally see. And it's nice being put your feet on the land. So,
and let's talk a little more about the kayak trip too, because that was one of the most interesting things about your trip that's different from a lot of the safaris that we've either talked about on the show or that I think most people go on. And one of the things that I would be concerned about is the same sort of thing with the, it's not common to go walking out in the savannah. As you're kayaking, you're there amongst the crocodiles and the hippos, which are two of the most dangerous animals in Africa. Are there safety concerns with that other than the usual kayak safety concerns about rolling your kayak and things like that?
There are safety concerns, and I don't want to downplay it. I mean, again, you are in the delta, and instead of having to worry about a lion attacking you, you do have to worry about a crocodile or a hippo. So when we were on the water, the guide would take the lead, and he would make sure that we wouldn't surprise the hippopotamus, or he would be able to spot a crocodile. And there was also support boat following us almost immediately and back. And so if there's ever any problem, they could jump on it.
And that's a non-kayak. You're saying that's a boat?
A motorized boat, yeah, okay. An actual flat, sort of a flat metal motorized boat. But you do have to be aware and you do have to be careful anytime you're in the wilderness. But overall, people go on the delta all the time. I mean, the locals are in these very narrow, maybe 10-foot long, 1-foot wide canoes, and they stand up in it and push it with poles, and they're called makoros. And so there are people, not just you, in the water.
Mm-hmm. And you're in single-person kayaks, you're on white water, you're on calm water.
We're in the delta, and so it's all pretty calm water. It's okay. Pretty easy paddling, actually. There's several options to go in the delta. You can take a motorized boat. You could actually do the exact same trip we did, camp out on the same islands that we camped out on, and take a motorized boat. You could go in a Makoro canoe, which is a homemade canoe by the locals. It's wooden, and it's about 10 feet long and about a foot wide, and it's pushed by local Makoro guides. And this new kayak company has just gotten set up, and they're doing kayak trips in Botswana. And so it was really exciting for me, being a kayak guide, to be able to experience this and be on the water. And typically the water in the delta is very calm. It's slow moving. It takes months to flow down from the northern part of Africa down to Botswana and eventually ends up in the Kalahari Desert. You rarely have to struggle. We had some new kayakers with very little experience who didn't have any problems. And it's amazing. I mean, you go through different ecosystems. You go through tall reeds, and then you can pull up and onto your island where you can camp, and there's an elephant sitting right there. So, you know, those are some of the amazing things that you get to see when you're in Botswana.
And I gathered from what you were saying before that you didn't actually get down to the Kalahari region of Botswana.
I unfortunately was not able to get down to the Kalahari region. That's one of the sort of the often overlooked areas of Botswana. It's mm-hmm. a drier region, and it's mainly known for the Bushmen that live there.
Sure.
And you can take tours there. And certainly if I ever go back to Botswana, it's one of the places I'm going to make sure I go to. But it's an opportunity to see an ecosystem that's completely different from elsewhere. And there's still animals there that you can see. And sometimes it's easy to see them because there's less water. And so they tend to congregate in certain areas.
What was the best day you had in this whole trip?
I think the best day we had was seeing the village and seeing the people dance. Being able to experience Botswana culture. Again, Botswana tends to be higher end tourism. And so you tend to be sheltered from the local communities. And to be honest with you, Botswana, you know, you can go to these 5-star lodges and stay in really, really luxurious rooms with 1200 count thread sheets and all that good stuff. And maybe 2 miles away, there's a village where most of the people live in mud huts. And so it is a poor country, and unfortunately, people don't necessarily get to see that all the time.
Well, and it also sounds like you were seeing a more authentic experience than when I was in Tanzania. For instance, we went to a cultural boma, which is the way people present themselves in the traditional fashion, but then they may go home to something else. And you were seeing this is where they live, this is the dancing they were doing to celebrate. So that's an awesome experience.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those travel experiences that everyone searches for, and we're just lucky to be able to experience it. The entire village was there, and most of the tribe was there. So there are hundreds and hundreds of people, and there was the village chief there and the tribal chief there. And this tribe is a very unique tribe because they don't have official representation within the Botswana government. And so they're trying to develop enough presence to be able to petition the government to say we get a vote in the government.
You were in Africa. You were not just in one of the major cities in Africa, but out in the bush. What day did you feel closest to home, and what made you feel furthest from home?
Closest to home is probably being on the water. You know, water is very different and very similar everywhere you go. And so you could say, oh, you know, look at the reeds here. They look like, you know, the reeds back in Florida, or, you know, look at the turn of the river here and it looks like something on the Green River in Utah. So that was where I felt the closest. Where you felt the farthest, I think, was especially at night. Because, again, one of the things about Africa is it's very hot during the day. And so everything goes and hides, except maybe the elephants. It's almost dead silence. You very rarely hear even a bird. But at night, everything comes out. And so it's just a cacophony of sound. Like I said, you hear the frogs, you hear the hippos. You know, you could even hear a lion roaring in the distance.
You mentioned something about going to the guides and saying you wanted to eat Botswana food. I'm going to guess that Botswana food is some sort of starch covered with some sort of meat.
Pretty close. In the southern part of Africa, corn is very popular.
Okay.
And they eat it in different forms. One of the most common forms is mealy meal, which is similar to grits or similar to polenta, to be honest with you. And there's different forms of the way they cook it. The one thing in Africa, in a lot of places, is that it wasn't that long ago where people didn't have stoves. And so everything was cooked over the campfire. And so most things are slow cooked. So you tend to get stews. In the lodges, you can get almost anything you want. You can get anything from a hamburger to a pizza to a kudu steak if you would like to try that. But out in the bush, you do tend to eat slow cooked meals because they don't have a lot of infrastructure within Botswana except within the major cities.
Okay. And that seems to be a real theme when we talk to people who've been to Africa, especially outside of the lodges, is that you call it different things in different places. But the meal, as you described it, from way up in East Africa to way down in South Africa, we've had people describe the same thing.
Right, right. We had very similar meals elsewhere. We're in South Africa and some of the more remote areas. And then also did a side trip to Madagascar and had similar food, except instead of corn, they eat mostly rice there.
Those seem to be the two main starches that I've run into, at least. You talked about taking pictures. Any one of the pictures that just really captured the country for you?
You know, I'm still going through the 1,000 photos from Botswana. And that's fun when you buy a new camera specifically for a trip in the days of digital photography. And so I was able to get some great photographs of animals, elephants, lions, great pictures that I'm still putting up on my blog, which I'm sure you'll have in the show notes. But I also got a lot of great photographs in the village where we were at of people dancing, people's expression. And also, like I mentioned, there's photographs of the land. just seeing the big red sun set at night, seeing the baobab tree, that type of thing. So unfortunately, I'm an amateur photographer, but sort of the quantity versus quality. If I take enough photos, I'm going to get one really good shot.
Well, I think that's also how you get to be better, is you take a lot of photos. Any tips that you learned while you were there? I mean, this is one of those trips of a lifetime that you don't want to come home and find out that you just missed the lion. You know, you were out of focus on the black rhino or whatever it is you're seeing that's rare, like a leopard. Anything that you learned that helped you?
I think one of the most important things is to get a really good guide and a good guide company that you go out with. Mm-hmm. And in Botswana, the local guides actually have to become certified. And it's a challenging process, is my understanding. You know, they have to go to school and study for 6 months and take this day-long test, which is pretty challenging. And so if they are a certified guide, they're very proud of it, they'll tell you. And, you know, they do learn the same information, so you will get some things repeated to you. But they do understand not only where the animals are, but how to treat them with respect and safety. And the other thing is try and find someone who's been there for a long time. Like I mentioned, our guide had grown up illegally hunting game. And so he knew one day he spotted some lion tracks, and I think he spent an hour tracking them. And lo and behold, we turned the corner and there's two lions, two brothers just sitting there in the shade. And so it's finding a good guide is one of the key things.
Excellent. One thing that you saw in Botswana that made you laugh and just say, only in Botswana?
At one campsite we landed, we were setting up camp, and an elephant decided to come in sort of the north end of the campsite. And, you know, you can't have an elephant stroll in your campsite, obviously. They may cause a little bit of damage. So the guides and we all got up, and elephants can't see very well, but obviously they can hear very well. And so you end up clapping and shouting, and the elephant sort of turned around and was not very happy. And then you could see him proceed to go around our campsite and try and sneak in the other side, which was hilarious, trying to see an elephant try and actually sneak in somewhere because it's just, you know, this gray mass. So
that sounds like something straight out of the elephant joke book that one of my friends had when I was a kid. But
exactly. How does an elephant hide behind a tree, right?
Right. So. One thing that you should know and one thing that you should pack before you go to Botswana.
The one thing you should pack is sunscreen.
Okay.
And people say that on your show often, you know, bring your sunscreen. But being in Africa, sunscreen is not necessarily an easy product to get. Because not everyone wears sunscreen there. Obviously, their skin color is darker. So that's one thing I highly recommend. The other thing is a good camera, as good of a camera as you can afford. And you might want to think about bringing binoculars because not all the animals are right in front of you.
Okay.
I think the one thing you should know is I think you need to know how you like to travel. In Botswana, there's sort of three different ways of going on safari. One is you could stay at a lodge, which tend to be more expensive. You could go on a mobile safari, which you drive from point to point, you set up camp, and you camp out. And some of the campsites are extremely luxurious. I mean, they'll set up a bar for you if you want. And of course, the more luxurious, the more you pay. And then there's the option of self-driving. And if you're going to self-drive, you really need to do your research. You need to have a lot of experience with off-roading, and you know, you have that sort of idealistic vision of being able to drive through and see everything in Africa. But if you're going to self-drive, you do need to know what you're getting yourself into.
Okay. And then at that point, you don't actually carry sunscreen, but meat tenderizer. Is that the
right, exactly. Yeah, you do need to have more time. And self-driving used to be less expensive than any of the other options, but it has actually gotten more expensive.
Interesting.
So yeah, unfortunately, the campsites have become privatized, so they become more expensive, more difficult to get, and just renting a vehicle could cost you more than going on a mobile safari.
And I'm assuming that you arranged for your safari while you were still in the States rather than arranging it locally?
I arranged the kayak safari in advance.
Okay.
Because that's a unique thing, and I was able to find this one kayak guide in Botswana. The land safari, we actually arranged on site.
Okay.
We had a couple different options of places where we wanted to go. We were thinking about going up to a village to donate supplies to a school, and we decided to go on a land safari instead. And so we were able to book something pretty short notice. I had contacted some safaris in advance, but if you do have extra time, that's one way to save money, is you can go to one of the major towns, Maun or Kasani. Those are the two major safari towns. And you can ask around and see if anyone's going out on safari, if there's extra spots available. And you end up saving money because these vehicles can carry up to 12 people. And sometimes they're only carrying two people. So, you know, you can often negotiate rates. You can share the cost of the trip with other people. So if you're budget limited, and Botswana is, of course, one of the most expensive places to travel to in Africa, this is one way to help you save money.
Well, that was the reason I asked, is I know you can often save money by doing that, but most people, when they're going that far, you know, it's just, it's really a trade-off at that point, whether they want to know that they have their plans lined up or whether they want to optimize the money. So, excellent. Anything else we should know before we follow in your footsteps and go to Botswana?
The one thing people should consider, Botswana is a very poor country, and you can contact some NGOs within the country to be able to donate supplies. And we brought some pretty basic supplies. I mean, we just brought maybe 10, 15 packs of pens. But, you know, that was very welcome to the village that we gave them to, because the kids can use them to write. And there's an excellent website called stuffyourrucksack.org, which actually put you in touch with NGOs in different locations, and they give you the opportunity to stuff your rucksack with supplies that they need. So,
interesting. I had not run into that. We had done a similar thing when I went to Tanzania. We had brought school supplies, and then we actually purchased some locally as well. But interesting. So final two questions, and you know what's coming here.
Right.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Botswana when what?
You really know you're in Botswana when you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear a lion roaring, which seems to be 3 feet away from your tent.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Having been 3 feet away from a roaring lion before, or even just a growling lion, there is something very primal about that sound. So,
right. And they're probably a half a mile away, but their roar is so loud that it travels so far that it's unmistakable. So,
And then, if you had to summarize Botswana in three words, what three words would you use?
It took me a long time to come up with this. Of course, I knew this was coming. I think the one is fauna. And, you know, I want to say animals, but it's not just the big mammals, but the birds. We were able to see a rather large spider about the size of a softball on the top of our tent when we woke up one morning. So, those amazing things.
They can hear the sound of pencils scratching Botswana off the list right there.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing country. I you know, if you can afford it, I highly recommend you going. And then the land is just amazing. Every morning I woke up, or every night when I went to bed, I just looked around and was just amazed by its beauty and the different areas. You know, the delta is one big area, and then going to some of the different parks and seeing just vast expanses of plains, and seeing a row of wildebeest walk one direction and a row of elephants walk another was amazing. And the people are so friendly there. I think that's the third thing. And trying to talk to people there, even the guides you go with won't necessarily open up to you unless you really reach out and try and communicate with them, because they don't want to insult you and they want to treat you with respect, of course. But, you know, if you spend some time talking with them, asking them how their family is, and, you know, maybe a beer or two never hurts, you know, you really get to learn what these people, and you get some great stories from them too. So.
And what is a good beer in Botswana?
Probably the beer I drank the most of is Black Label.
I'm just amazed the number of places I've been that everybody has a beer. And as a non-beer drinker, I feel so left out. But
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, you go to every country, like in Madagascar, it was Three Horses beer. And it was always written down in English, even though everything else was in Malagasy or French. But that was the one thing in English.
Oh, funny. So. Now, you've made reference a couple times here to the fact that you, during your day job, are a kayak guide. And who do you guide with?
I am a guide with a company called Adventures in Florida. Even though I live in California, I do work with a small family-owned company. And we do trips all over the country and all over the world. And so, of course, we specialize in trips in Southeast U.S., the Everglades, Okefenokee, Swamp, those places. But we also do trips in California, Utah, and we're expanding internationally. And we're actually going to be offering kayaking in Botswana. And we're titling it Paddling with the Elephants.
Excellent. So the increasingly misnamed Adventures in Florida.
Exactly.
Spencer, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your newfound love for Botswana.
Thanks, Chris. I really appreciate it. And thanks for everything you've done and all the places you've taken us over the years.
Oh, you're welcome.
I heard this week from Kadra, who was on the show with his wife way back in episode 97, talking about the Seychelles and Dubai, for where they went for their honeymoon. They live in Istanbul, where he says the amateur traveler helps him get through the rush hour traffic. But he also had a comment on the episode on Bodrum, Turkey, and said, I know that everybody are not history buffs like you are, but I want to add a couple of comments about Bodrum's Museum of Underwater Archaeology, located within the Bodrum Castle. The exhibitions of Karyan Princess and Ulu Burun Shipwreck are a must-see if you like archaeology. Karyan Princess's tomb was found within the center of Bodrum, actually under a taxi station during a construction job. It's the tomb of a noble lady who was buried with her belongings and golden jewelry. The face was restored from the bones, so now we can see what she was like at 400 BC, face-to-face with her wax statue. Ulu Burun Shipwreck is a late 14th century BC shipwreck of the late Bronze Age period discovered by a Turkish sponge diver in 1982. It is special as it was a trade ship carrying goods from all over the Mediterranean civilizations of the time. You can find more details of the museum, and Kadri gives the website here, but the funniest part is that as many tourists are expecting underwater action, such as underwater tunnels, instead of 3,500-year-old glasswork, amphoras, and shipwrecks. I see. It is not an underwater museum. It is a museum about an underwater shipwreck. A very important clarification. And you can find more information about Bodrum from Kadri on that episode, which is episode 271. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have a question or comment, feel free to do what Kadri did and leave them on the episode with best so that other people can see them at amateurtraveler.com, or drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cave.